well. We're 1 week in, and here we are, season 3, episode 2 of LOI Weekly. What a first weekend of action we had. Plenty to talk about with myself, Johnny Ward, and Daniel McDonald. And we've two special guests who'll be here very shortly, talking about their old days, actually, at Belvo, and also the First Division campaign, and what life might be like at Shamrock Rovers this season. We'll tell you about those very shortly. We're going to have Tommy Barrett audio as well from the League of Ireland launch from last week. And I spoke to Ian Birmingham after the St. Patrick's Cork game on Friday. As ever, we're on Podcast Republic, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, iTunes. On Twitter, we're at LOI Weekly. And we are, as ever, in association with Air Sport and Independent.ie. And Daniel McDonald, we've something to talk about. We've first round of games to get through.
We always have something to talk about, John.
We've a lot to talk about.
We've a lot more to talk about. And we're going to try and condense it into like...
About an hour.
A tidy week one wrap.
Yeah.
Week one wrap.
You know the Final Furlong Racing podcast? People are very critical because it goes on for like an hour and 50 minutes at times. Takes 2 hours. Or we're not going to do that.
We were long enough last week.
We were. That was our first show.
We had so much to talk about. And then we were just like... interrupting and you
all
know,
over the
tangents
shop.
And
we needed
like,
the run.
Paul Keegan was talking about like tactical and you were like, what about Astro pitches? And then all of a sudden we went off on a sort of a 5 minute sort of thing about Astros and we ended up, I don't know, like it was longer than a match.
It was longer than a match. We had 5 matches last week.
Needed the run. I like that.
Need the run. But what was it like to be back on the beat anyway?
That was good, yeah. The structure of Friday night. It's good crowds last Friday night.
Great crowds, I thought.
Now, I never get too carried away with those opening week crowds. But at the same time, there was definitely a noticeable buzz. I don't know what it is. There seems to be, like sometimes on social media and all that, it's a bit of an echo chamber because you follow a lot of people that are in the League of Ireland anyway. So that can be completely misleading. But there did seem to be a bit more curiosity maybe from outside. Maybe it was just there was no Six Nations, there was no FA Cup, or sorry, it was no Premier League, so it was an FA Cup weekend, or is it just recent debates about the state of the league and how important it might be
or
for
the
future
without a game?
Yeah, and I think sometimes people go out, almost go overboard and say, well, this is a sign of health. No, to me, crowds last week is a sign of potential. And the overriding point for me when we talk about the long break is that, well, these crowds are good. You know, can this give us the incentive and the self-belief in all clubs to go, well, why don't we go an extra week longer next year? Why don't we do a contract week longer next year? Give us one more week of Friday games rather than one fewer midweek game so we can maybe start a bit earlier or finish a bit later or whatever it is. Because the crammed fixture list that comes up soon isn't just the FAI's. In fact, it's not really the FAI's fault that you could. I don't like the way they've structured it, but they're ultimately responding to clubs, certain clubs who don't want the season to be any longer. So, if you have crowds like last week, I think it makes it easier rather than some of those corresponding fixtures later in the season on a Monday night could have a third of the crowd there.
Definitely, you know, yeah.
So that's something that we need to
address. If you were to play the propaganda department card, you could say Cork City weren't even playing at home and we still got very good crowds. But then you say UCD were away.
Yeah, they'll square
but
it. I suppose,
without getting ahead of ourselves, if you go to these five games, particularly Inchicore, Oriel and Dalymount, you know, if you're a first timer going to these games, the facilities are pretty damn shoddy. So it's like, you know, will I come back? I mean, I was sitting in the seats in Richmond Park, absolutely cramped, like couldn't move your legs in it.
Yeah.
If you go along to Oriel Park, that's your first visit, you're not going to be too impressed by the facilities. And I have to say that in terms of the actual football, it wasn't great. Now, the game you were at, Dundalk and Sligo, wasn't a great game. But the game I was at Cork and Pats, was very little football played. And I was kind of giving out a bit about this. I wouldn't get too down about it. It was the first game of the season. But in terms of my experience of watching Pats and Mick McCarthy was at the game, it was a disjointed game of football.
Yeah, but you know, you can be a bit sensitive sometimes, a bit apologetic. Like, I mean, there's bad games in every league. And to be honest, Dundalk Sligo wasn't a classic by any means. I don't think they watered the pitch before, which was a bit of an issue.
Why would that happen?
I don't know. And it seems to be particularly bouncy.
I want to bring up another thing with you. John Gill, before the game, was interviewed, and I didn't actually watch it back, but Alan Cawley spoke about it afterwards, that it was like he was asked, so who's picking the team or who's doing this or that? And there seemed to be a bit of confusion. Is there still a bit of an issue?
I know. It was Vinnie Parrott's picking the team. I mean, there's no confusion about that. Maybe they feel funny when they're placed under questioning about it because, you know, I don't know. It's the type of question that would throw someone, maybe. But, I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, I'm sure there probably is a group discussion on picking the team, you know, in a managing group. But, I mean, it is Vinnie Parrott's team. You know, I mean, I think that's clear. You know, that's clear if you watch the sideline. But Of course, you know, you start off with a bad result, you leave yourself open to everything being scrutinized. So, I mean, I don't know where we start in terms of running through the games. I mean,
we start there, I suppose.
We start there.
Sligo, it was a bit of a smash and grab. Gary Rogers wouldn't be happy with the goal.
No, and I suppose 9 times out of 10, the Dock would have won that game in terms of chances, in terms of everything that happened. I mean, really unfortunate with Benson and the injury. Maybe not as serious as first feared, but he's still going to be out for, you know, up until the maybe before the mid-season break. And
that's not at all as bad as it. Like, I was talking to him yesterday, and what seemed to be a season-long injury, without it, I don't think it's actually been fully clarified yet. It might not be as bad.
No, but it's still, I mean, up to the break is still potentially 2/3 of the league season. So, you know, it's still a massive blow.
McElhenney
as well, maybe a shorter period, but still a period of time.
What about the Sligo tackling?
I wouldn't be getting it was physical and they were robust. I mean, sometimes I think on that pitch it's a bit harder. I think what the broader thing goes to show is that you can talk about pre-season all you want, and you can sit here and think, well, Dundalk are certainties, and you can analyse things on paper and stuff, but then you get into matches for points and stuff happens that you can't legislate for, and all of a sudden the Benson McElhenney thing now throws things up in the air a small bit. But Dundalk really should have won the game.
Murray was impressive.
Murray did well. I don't think it's crisis mode by any stretch. I mean, Dundalk should have won the game. They didn't. It's the opening game of the season. But at the same time, like, they still need to go to Harps on Friday and just win. They lost the Leinster Senior Cup game on Monday with a reserve team. Now, I think the Leinster Senior Cup should be under-21 competition, under-22s. I hate people even talking about it. Seriously, it's a nonsense. It's got a bit of a cult thing going on, which I actually think is like, do one, like, you know. There's actually an issue, but there is an issue with games for lads over the age of 19. And I think Leinster Senior Cup, I don't think there should be first teamers playing in that competition. But anyway,
we'll get to the Pats game after a little bit. But when I did speak to Ian Birmingham, he was just saying the chance to get these players out, all beating the Leinster Senior Cup, the Pats have a player nearly for every position.
No, it's
now.
True. There is a value for players.
Waterford Rovers, though, was probably almost a big talking point in a way. I thought if Rovers needed to start well, if they were to have any chance win the league, in my view, and this was a real bonus 2 points out of nothing, a scruffy corner. Ethan Boyle and or their new Austrian striker.
Well, they're desperate to give him the goal.
That was a bit of an odd one. Yeah.
He had another miss just before that. Unfortunately, like, what I've seen of him so far between a friendly and last week is like missing close range chances, so maybe a bit of a confidence boost to get him going. But I mean, I did watch the celebrations back to see was there any real trace of reaction of a goal scorer from him, and I just didn't really see it, you know. But
reminds me of the first time I met you, Galway United Drogheda, and Jason Caby scored a goal that nobody claimed except him, and I don't even think it was his goal. But it was just one of these scruffy wins in front
that,
of nearly
that the winter of 99, John. Was
it that long ago?
Around that time, I'd say.
Over 4,100.
The follow up to Brian Adams' summer of 69, winter of 99, in United Park and Drogheda.
But Rovers sold out their allocation. Brilliant goal by Kevin Lynch to put Waterford 1-0 up. I didn't think Alan Manus was actually great for the goal.
No. Well, you know, so.
And a broader point we'll make, a lot of the goalies in this league, the very good goalkeepers, are getting on. But Brendan Clark, who's I think 33, made an incredible save as well in the Pats game.
So we had a good start for Derry at home to UCD. I was a bit surprised by the sort of the emphatic nature. We'll talk to Rovers.
UCD were shambles at the back, I thought, in the highlights anyway.
And I suppose from Derry's point of view, I mean, Parkhouse scoring. But
the boy Stokes playing well.
Yeah, but
it was interesting.
Kieran Harkin is the interesting one as well. I mean, again, you're only going off the clips, but I heard Colly O'Neill spoke about him afterwards. Kieran Harkin, they've signed from Coleraine. He was wearing the number 4 shirt, and he did well by all accounts. So there's some new players from Derry that I think we'll get to know this season.
Nearly 3,000 in Daly Mount. And if ever there were a Dinny Corcoran finish, I thought that finish was just classic Dinny Corcoran.
A nice team move. Well, Dinny was slow off the mark last season. He actually got a lot of his goals in the latter half of last year. So, I mean, both sort of need him firing from the start, because he's like himself and Keith Ward. There's a couple of reliable faces there mixed in with a lot of their newer boys. And, I mean, Danny Mandreo seemed to get some good reviews.
Ward that Regbeck could be coming back.
Wade Slater was playing. So, yeah, we'll see what will happen with these equations.
And Ollie Horgan said they actually were the better team in the first half.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah, this could be a new season, new Ollie.
Crazy stuff.
Who knows?
I was in Inchicore for the Pats Cork game. I think that's our last game of the brief roundup. Darragh O'Connor, you spoke about in pre-season. I thought he was really, really good.
Described as the Irish Messi by Pat Dolan.
Pat Dolan was sitting.
You were in the director's box.
I turned up a little bit sloppy now. I was a little bit late. I witnessed the crowd trouble beforehand as a consequence of maybe being late, but very, very unsavoury scenes outside of McDowell's, which kind of spilled over after the game and that the Cork team bus was attacked and I think the windows were damaged. So it wasn't nice to see. I don't really know the ins and outs of what happened. I could only speak.
You'll only get in. You'll wrap yourself in knots going that way.
Yeah, but obviously I do remember a girl crying outside McDowell's, and it was very unsavoury to see it because it was a nasty situation. There was a rush of people coming out of the pub who clearly, these were grown men who were running, like, and I'd never seen that in a League of Ireland game before. I think there's basically no crowd trouble in the League of Ireland we're talking about. I think we big it up, you know, Rovers, Bows, generally nothing.
But it does
happens.
Show how sometimes there's a, I think sometimes the image of all the guards at games is not helpful. Mm. However, when something like this happens, when there's a bigger crowd than expected, it goes to show that they probably have to be seen to take every precaution if this happens. So it's actually a difficult one. We'll have Bows Rovers next Monday, but it's like last season. You know, well, it was more so in Tala, but, you know, you'll have got, you know, guards behind lads taking the throw, you know, which looks absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah,
you know?
But observing the throw, like, just to see if he fouled it.
Just see what's going on.
But, this was an interesting game. It was disjointed, but you really got the sense from Pats they were going to leave everything on the pitch here. They were very, very physical at
3-5-2.
Played 3-5-2. I'm not sure if they'd planned to play 3-5-2. Did they change kind of tack midweek because of a couple, one or two players who were out? Cork, on the other hand, they didn't really deserve to lose the game. They had good enough chances, but didn't put much passing together. And you could just sense talking to Ian Birmingham after the game that, you know, they were really, really up for this. And there was a big
sense.
To be clear,
you didn't talk to Ian Birmingham after the game.
I did talk to him after the game, albeit the following day.
The following day.
So what happened here, dear listener, was that I was guilt-tripped into...
No, you went home. You went to the pub after the game because you were in the director's box with like Kilbane and Frank Gavin.
Why do you keep bringing
Michael
this up?
Cody,
I had a very good
Michael
view.
Hayes. You're in the director's box with the great and the good. I'm just saying, listen, I mean, we're a podcast of the people here. And you're going
McCarthy
to the director's box in the game. That's fine.
Thanks very much to Jamie Moore, by the way, for getting me a cup of tea at halftime, which was badly needed.
Right.
Mick McCarthy was there. He didn't see a good game.
Yeah, but you basically headed off after the game.
I should have gotten some audio after the game, but I genuinely completely forgot. It wasn't that I decided not to. But I was felt so guilty about it that I messaged Ian Birmingham on Saturday. Now, Ian Birmingham, I got to know him through horses because he owns part of Cubomania.
Oh, yeah.
Could run at Cheltenham.
Good horse,
and he's having an unbelievable buzz out of that. But... he couldn't take the smile off his face because they'd beaten Cork City. They started the league well. And speaking to him in this interview, I couldn't help but feel his admiration for their new manager, Harry Kenny.
Ian, that's a great start to the season for you. You know, you don't regularly beat Cork, and to do it in that gritty style must have been very encouraging for you.
Yeah, listen, we're thrilled with the win. I think we could have played better with the ball, but I think we out-battled them. I think we outworked them. And I think it's a different side to us that probably people haven't seen over the last number of years. And listen, we're thrilled with the win, and hopefully we can kick on now.
Because it's funny, it wasn't a great game. Of all the Pats games I've been at the last few years, I think this was one of the poorest in terms of actual quality, but I don't think you give a damn.
No, listen, we don't care. I think the first game of the season, you just want to get up and run and get 3 points on the board. As I said, there was no quality in the game, really. A couple of passes of play here or there, but I think as I said, we out-battled them. I think we out-worked them, and listen, it's no mean feat to do that against Cork. I think they based our game on that sort of stuff, and I think that's the benchmark for us now. If we can keep to that standard kind of work rate through the season, and obviously we will get better with the ball. I think we've got some quality, serious football players, and we will get better.
That's the thing, because that quality wasn't really there last night. Do you know what Chris Forrester, that, you know, he give him a few games and he'd improve?
Yeah, listen, he's come back. He hasn't played in a long time, and he needs to get up and running. He's obviously needs to get working his fitness and stuff like that, but that'll come in the next couple of games. We're playing games. You have a game now Monday against Wexford. I'm sure he'll play a part in that as well. And listen, he'll be up and running and flying in no time like the rest of us. I think the fitness was there. I think in 90th minute last night, you could see lads forcing the gut to get to close them down and putting their bodies on the line. And I think it's testament to the coach and staff and the manager that the work they've put in with us in pre-season.
Just in general as well, I remember at the end of the game, Gary Shaw went and kind of chased the ball, and there was a big roar from the crowd. There was 3,500 there. It really felt like the old days in Inchcore.
We said that come in after the game. It's probably the biggest crowd that, obviously, we played Newcastle last year. They all come out for them sort of games. But I think it's the biggest crowd we've had in a long time, probably since when we were winning the leagues and the cups and all that, so over the last couple of years. But listen, we won last night, which was the main thing, and hopefully that can entice them back down. I think there's a bit of a buzz around the place, and listen, it'd be great to see them down there all the time. As I said, they're great when they're roaring and get roaring us on the victories, and listen, hopefully they can come back down.
What's this management team like in general, and Harry Kenny obviously particularly?
listen, he's come in, he's been a breath of fresh air, and I keep saying the same things, and he's really demanding in training, and listen, if you're not on it in training, he lets you know, kind of thing. And there's a bit of fear in the players, which is a good thing, kind of. And listen, like Jared and Sean are there doing the coaching, and I think, listen, the players have bought into everything that they're doing. Mark Keneally and Lee Van Heften doing the strength and conditioning, everybody's bought into, there's no moaning, everybody's just getting on with their job. I think it's probably one of the best group of players of as well have been involved in over the last while, probably going back to nearly when Pete Mann was the manager. We had a great group then, but listen, it's everything's positive at the minute. Listen, we'll only be tested when we come to lose the game or something like that, but no, listen, it's a good start for us, and hopefully we can kick on now.
Two positives, I suppose, from where they've come from in different ways. Mikey Drennan and Conor Clifford, who got man the match.
Yeah, listen, Mikey's been brilliant in pre-season, and to be honest with you, it was a flip of a coin, I'd say. Well, for Hardy's decision between him and Gary Shaw, the two of them have been flying in pre-season, like everybody has. And what we were saying to the lads during the week, and we probably only kind of got the gist of who Hardy was going to play probably at the start of this week, because obviously he's worked in shape and that. But before that, it could have been anybody playing, because everybody's been kind of levelled at kind of the same standard, and it's just a great bit of competition. But Conor Clifford, I think he was everywhere last night. He was just he was brilliant, and like, I think he epitomises the work rate and the whole team, like the way he played. And Mikey, as I said, he gets a chance, he'll score. Like, so listen, it's all positive at the minute, and we need to kick on now again.
What about that save from Brendan Clarke as well, from Gary Buckley? Because, you know, Gordon Banks died, obviously, during the week, but that was what came to my mind. It was, I couldn't see how he could save it, and he did somehow.
Yeah, listen, when he saved it, and obviously when I was playing, I kind of said, geez, that's a good save. But I've just seen it, like, back again, and it's unbelievable, like, how he got down and clawed it away. Like, but no, we're gonna need him. We're going to need things like that to happen, like Clarkey to bail us out. We're going to need Mikey to bail us out, going to goals as well. Like, so, listen, it's as I said, it's a great start for us, and all the lads are buzzing. So,
final question, without getting ahead of yourselves, how far can you go this season, and what's your actual ambition?
Listen, as I said to people before, where we've been the last couple of years, we've no divine right to say that we're going to go and challenge or anything like that. Listen, our main aim is Europe. We want to play, we want to finish as high as we can, but our main aim is Europe. And listen, if we're in a position 3/4 way through the season, why not have a crack? Listen, I'm not going to say we're going to win the league or we're going to be up there challenging Dundalk, but we've got to get Europe, and I think that's the main aim for us. But listen, if we're in and around there, we'll not have a crack at them.
You gotta love the dog barking in the background. There was actually
so where did you actually do that?
In Smithfield.
Where did you actually follow them? Did you follow them to his house?
I cycled home from our new sock thing on Saturday, and just cycled up to Smithfield, ran into the fresh shop there to get dinner.
Yeah.
And came out, and there was a woman begging, which was, you know, obviously, sorry, love, whatever. Then start the interview, and she came over and begging again, so I had to start it again. Then there was a dog barking, which you can hear as well. Just like, we just have to get through this at this stage. Because I was still letting on, it was actually outside the ground after the game, but you obviously blew my cover.
Well, he did, because he said the game against Cork last night.
Did he say that?
Yeah, he did.
So he said that said that once, and we started again. I didn't notice him saying the second time.
Anyway.
But in any event, this is... You can just feel what he was saying about, like, the Liam Buckley era kind of into the Harry Kenny era, that there is a bit of a difference in terms of their mentality.
Yeah, well, I mean, of course, but also when a player is interviewed about a new manager at the start of a time, he's always going to have to be positive about it anyway. But, like, I mean, but at the same time,
he does like
you
him,
can feel
definitely.
That it's very genuine, you know, but, I mean, it's a difficult one. When you're asked about a new manager coming in as a player, you have to sort of... extol the virtues of it. You know?
We've
got two players here now who can.
Jake Hyland, I know you like a bet, right? If you'd laid St. Pat's at 50-1 to win the league, would you be a little bit worried?
A little bit. I don't think they'll win the league now. Top three.
50-1 though.
No. Yeah. Good value loser.
Possibly, right. Yeah.
Do you want to introduce our guest, John? Or just
that's Jake Hyland. Yeah. Drogheda captain. And Sean Kavanagh, former Belvedere teammate and Shamrock Rovers left back extraordinaire.
I don't know about that. It's probably a bit too far, but yeah.
Sean, how did you end up playing left back? Trevor Clark injury?
Yeah, Trevor got injured. And then I think Luke got injured as well. And I don't know, maybe I was the only one that could play left back, and the only left-footed player, so he stuck me there. And
You've also played championship football at left back. Should be a small bit modest here in terms of your left back pedigree, John, to be fair.
You are aware of
Sean's career before against Shamrock Rovers, no?
Dan, you have it written down here. Sean Kavanagh's story from last year. He's had an interesting career so far.
Yeah, well, let's more so go back to this, because the two boys here are former Belvedere teammates. Now, we went through the archives last night to the Danone Nations Cup 2006. But Jason Byrne is an official ambassador. We have the row of Belva players. We did tweet it out, everyone, so you can look at the picture. And there's a pretty talented team, it must be said. You've got Daryl Lenehan in the back row. And then we have like three lads together. We've got Danny Rogers in the middle, the goalkeeper, either side of Jake Hyland and Sean Kavanagh. Now, we put up the team photo. What I would say is that there's a collection of other photographs. Sean's just tackling. He's in action. But there's this heartbreaking shot of a young lad after missing a penalty looking distraught, Jake. What happened?
That's my confidence shot for this season already.
So, like, who were you playing? What was the circumstances?
I think it was under 10s or 11s we were playing in the Now Nations Cup. We got to the final playing in Clonmel Town, and we went to penalties. And I didn't want to take the penalties, the last one.
Was it at all, like, you know, put your hands up?
Yeah,
in the
no one else put their hands
did
up.
Did you take one, Sean? No?
I can't remember. I don't know. I think I probably would have. Yeah. I'd sort of back myself to take a penalty, yeah. So
you wouldn't though, Jay.
we were young and I was the fifth one to go, and no, there was other lads crying over it. And I said, right, I went up and take it and hit the crossbar.
What age are you?
10 or 11.
Oh, was that you were that young?
If you won the tournament though, you get to go to play in for Ireland in France.
It was in Lyon Stadium.
Yeah,
wasn't it?
It was in the...
Oh, no. I didn't realise that.
Yeah. Thanks
That's
for
heartbreak.
Bringing it up.
Sean, did you speak to him for long? As
no,
a team?
It's been a couple of years. I had to let that one go.
Because Jake, you're a year older, right? So you...
I'm a year younger.
You're younger, sorry. Yeah. So you played together for a couple of years, but then you ended up at separate teams at a certain point. Yeah. Yeah. But it was a pretty talented group that you had. Like, sort of Dara and Danny Rogers and a few others, you know? So
yeah, very good team,
yeah. Yeah, it was good. Good team. And then obviously Jake was the year younger, so he was really good at his age and came up and played at us as well, so yeah, he was good at that age.
Where did you go from there then? Where did you go, Sean?
I stayed at Belvo until I was 17, and then obviously moved away from there. So
tell us about your move and your career in England.
I stayed at Belvo until I was about 17.
Were you expecting that you'd get a move away?
Not really, no, to be honest. I was in fifth year at the time, and I was thinking about leaving and doing the FOSS course, and then
playing League of Ireland, or
I actually met a couple of managers, and I trained with UCD a couple of times. So
which would have been under would have been Colley, was it?
No, it was Martin Russell.
Martin Russell.
Yeah, so I trained with them a couple of times, and the move was sort of up in the air at the minute, and then went over on trial to Fulham, for a couple of weeks, and then I had planned to go to Middlesbrough as well on trial, so I went there for a couple of weeks as well, and then. Yeah, I must have done better at Fulham, so they offered me a deal. So at 17, I bit the hand off and took it and went.
It all happened quickly, though, as well. That, you know, you went to Fulham, and then what, by 19, you played first team football, am I right? Or were you a bit younger? Even?
No, I think I was 20 when I made my
20,
debut.
Was it? Sorry, yeah. But then you got to run on the side, because, I mean, Fulham was changing manager, and there was a lot of instability around that time, but then you just got your break.
Yeah, it was sort of sprung on me. I missed the season before they got relegated from the Premier League. I missed the season through injury, and then came back in pre-season, and I found myself with the first team. I was expecting not to be nowhere near it, and then second game of the season, I actually made my debut, and I was like, yeah, it happened really quick. I wasn't expecting to be near it at all. And
how did you find the level?
Yeah, it was tough, really tough. I actually made my debut against Wolves at home, and Matt Doherty was playing.
Right.
Were you playing left back or left wing then?
I was playing left back. Mm. Yeah, we got beat 1-0, but I found the level was like miles apart from what I've played at. Sort of, I would have played under 21 football, and going into a first team was just miles apart.
Was that Felix McGatty played you first? Yeah. So yeah, he was, because I remember reading stuff about him at the time. He had a reputation for being slightly eccentric, for working players hard, or what was his?
Yeah, he was.
What was his
obviously manager? For me, he was unbelievable. He gave me my debut, but he did work the lads hard. Like, there was a couple of games where would have been third or fourth game of the season. We played away on the Saturday and we got beat, and he was known for, like, if you get beat, you're in on the Sunday, which is sort of a recovery day. So we got beat on the Saturday, I think 4 or 5-1, and we came in on the Sunday morning and we did like a 10K run. around the training ground. So he was strict on the lad.
Yeah,
is that, that kind of caveman stuff, though?
Yeah, it's like it's older stuff. It's sort of nowadays. It's sort of dinosaur stuff, isn't it? But I could only be glad to him. Like he gave me my debut and stuff, but. Yeah, it was tough at the time.
It's funny, though. I think of you as a left winger. Maybe that's because when I started watching you at Rovers, you went back left back then, and you know, you're very, very good in the ball, but I would always have thought of you as more of an offensive player. But where do you see yourself?
I get asked that question a lot. Like, even before pre-season, I met a couple of lads who were in the league. They were asking, where are you going to play and stuff. I don't know. I actually find myself better at coming onto the game from left back. As a left-sided midfielder, I don't think I've...
You're more actually, isolated, maybe.
Yeah. I don't know if I could beat people 1v1 and stuff like that. I'd rather use the ball and stuff like that, but...
Left of a five might be your best position.
Yeah. We played there a couple of times. Played that formation last year a couple of times, and I played wing-back in Europe and stuff, and we done all right. Like, so, yeah, I think probably that'd be my best position.
So, I mean, Sean, you played a lot of first-team football, but, I mean, sometimes in football in England, it's about the breaks, and, I mean, Kit Simmons was very good for you, but then he leaves and you have different managers come in and they have different impressions. And is that sort of what happened to you in terms of maybe just slipping out of the picture there a bit? Because then you had to go on, you went to a couple of loan deals and so on. Hartlepool, was it Mansfield?
Yeah.
That was just, it just sort of went against you a small bit.
Yeah, it was just, I wouldn't say it was, well, Kit was really good to me, and then say a managerial change comes in, which happens to everyone, and then you're sort of down the pecking order and wasn't really training with the first team. I was, 22, 23 at this stage, and I wasn't training with the first team, so I had to go out on loan. And obviously, the first one to Mansfield didn't work out. I didn't really play. The second one went to Hartlepool, and I was playing and got injured. And then that was sort of, for me, the writing on the wall. I only had a year left in my contract, and the first team was doing really well at the stage at Fulham, so I wasn't going to get anywhere near it, so... I thought, yeah, best bet is probably to try and look to come home.
Let's talk Jake then before we let him to get a little bit of an input on his own career. Because we can get back to your Rovers time, which has been very good so far. But what happened with you post that, missing the penalty shootout at under 11?
I've gone downhill since. I was playing a year above for 2 years with that Belvo team and got to like under 13s, and everyone just starts getting physically bigger. So I wanted to drop back down and play at my own edge and dropped back down. I played for Malahide for a year in Crumlin, and then I ended up going back to Belvo to play my own 95 year, and then signed for Bowes 19s from then. I went from 17s, DSL Premier 17s, up to trained with UCD, first team, Bowes first team, and obviously I sport Bowes as a young lad, so...
You have a soft spot for Bowes.
I definitely have a soft spot for Bowes, yeah. So Owen Heary was the manager, and he was already taking over then. And I went up to train with the first team. He just said, look, if you sign for the 19s, he said, you'll be the captain. And if you keep progressing, like, I'll give you a chance to come into the first team. And I knew he would, because there was players at the time there, like Luke Bourne and Dan Bourne, that were had come from 19s into first team football. So I knew that if I took the opportunity, I'd get it at the end of it to go play for the first team. And done 2 years with the 19s, then Owen brought me to the first team. And from then, I done a season with him. He left, went to Sligo. And obviously, I'd broken in to the team that year. Scored on my debut in the League Cup. Scored on my debut in the league. So I thought I was doing really well. And then obviously, like Sean said, a new manager comes in. And I've no regrets. Like Keith Long came in, and he's
very fair, if nothing else, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a great manager. But it was his first big job in the League of Ireland with Bowes. He's with at Long before that. And he had a job to do. So whereas Owen was blooding youngsters in that first season, Keith brought in proven players, and he wasn't giving you the chance, you know what I mean? So I'd say if I had been a season or two later at Bowes, I could have been lucky and getting into the team, because if you look a year or two later, you look now, they don't have any money, so they are bringing players
through. Yeah. Who was your first team, your goal in the league in your debut was against who?
Sligo, away to Sligo.
That must have been some feeling.
Yeah, I was buzzing, yes. Yeah. Obviously, because Bowes is club close to my heart, to go down there and start on my debut and scored, but obviously I felt from then on I was doing really well. I wanted to push on the next season, and it just, when the new manager came in, I felt like I had to prove myself again.
So, I mean, we're going to fast forward a small bit, Jake, but you've then established yourself at Drogheda, and you've become a first-team player at Drogheda, and then...
Under Pete Mahon, initially.
Yeah, and, you know, you had a season in the Premier with Drogheda, and then went down, whatever, and you're trying to get back up last year. And you get to the playoffs last year against Shells, and it's all going to plan. I mean, Drogheda are going through, I guess, and what happens?
It was all going to plan, yeah. We were 1-0 up at that stage. It would have been 1-1 in the tie over two legs. And
you were pretty big. Like, a lot of people wouldn't have expected you to do this because, you know, you were backs against the wall. Big underdogs.
Yeah, but I think we knew that game. We trained on a Sunday morning. The game was on a Monday night, and we were going 3-5-2, and we knew in Tolka Park the bigger pitch would have suited us. Air style of football against Shelbourne, they were very direct, and obviously United Park is a tight pitch, so we knew going out to that game that would suit us. So went 1-0 up after a couple of minutes. They got a man sent off, and as a midfielder, it's great when you get a man sent off. They get a man sent off because you get more time with the ball. So I was picking up the ball from deep, going forward with the ball, and then out of nowhere, I just went to pass the ball out wide, and bad tackle comes in late, and that's me done now.
How bad was the tackle, or could you describe how your recollection of it?
I don't even remember the tackle coming in. I just remember dribbling the ball through the midfield by someone, going out left, passing it, and then getting a bang and being lifted up in the air. And I said, spoke to Tim after, and I said I didn't even remember him getting a red card because I was in that much agony on the floor.
Have you had anything remotely similar to this?
No, not like a leg break or anything, touch wood. But yeah, I heard about the tackle and I heard it was shocking. Like, I didn't see it now myself, but yeah. I heard it was unbelievable. Like,
it's what happened after this that I'm
really
intrigued.
Yeah, I mean, it was just to say, I mean, it was a bad tackle by James English. The Owen Heary, Shaver manager, used the quote cowardly afterwards to describe the tackle, which was it was a strong quote that was on the record. But I mean, I suppose, you know, he's not here to defend himself as such, but I think it was a bad challenge. But then you then embarked on what was an eye-opening experience after that yourself, Jake.
Yeah, definitely. I wouldn't like to go through that again. Wouldn't wish on my worst enemy. So when it happens, it's like when you roll your ankle, it's like that times 10 with pain. And I went in the back and my physio came in after and he said, it might be just your ankle ligaments. Think positive. And he walked out of the room and the Shells Club doctor said, no, that's a broken leg. Like, so
roughly what time is this now? So this is like, it happened in the second half of the game, is it?
No, it happened at the end of the first half. So say quick off half quarter, eight. Half eight. Yeah.
Half eight, roughly. So you break your leg at half eight.
Yeah, so got the ambulance, obviously went to the Mater Hospital, straight in for an x-ray. Grand find out and sitting there till 6 o'clock in the morning, no answer. It's like the Wild West.
What were you doing
there
then? Yeah, so what were you actually doing? You got in there, we'll say roughly 9 o'clock. Where are you waiting? What's the story? You've broken your leg.
Go in for an x-ray and they say, right, doctor, be with you soon. Sitting there till 6 in the morning. And I just said, like, Tim was texting me through the night and obviously he'd fell asleep. There was no one from the club on to me there going about their normal life. So I just said, look, I have to go home. So I went home, fell asleep for a while, got up, had a shower, went straight up to Jota and the hospital up there got looked after first class.
So hang on. So, I'm trying to figure out, You go in for an x-ray, right? And are you in a boot, a cast? What are
sitting
you
there in a wheelchair.
In a wheelchair?
Yeah.
And
who are the people beside you even?
Yeah, so you're
sat. I don't want to know.
Really?
Yeah, it's just like a different world in there.
Just all other patients coming in or whatever it might
be. Is it drunken related injuries or?
Everything, there's just people, you may as well have people living in there. Like, that's why I got to that stage and my mother was with me and I just said, look, I have to go. Wasn't staying there to put up with all that. Like, you're waiting 6-7 hours to see a doctor. My name didn't get called, so I just said, look, I'll go.
It's the wait as well. You don't know when you're actually going to get called. And if they said to you, listen, we can't see you till the morning, you better off go to Drada.
Yeah, well, the fact that I'm in agony with a broken leg as well.
Like, well, this is my thing. Like, what are you under? Are you taking painkillers? What do you actually have to...
Yeah, I got an injection after the game.
Right.
And but at that stage, you're in the middle of the night, it's wearing off, you know what I mean? So 6 o'clock, we just said, look, I have to go. And then the next morning, went up to Jota and they were first class with me.
So really, you're talking about if you went into... did you go to the hospital after the game? Or was it during the game?
During the game. Like,
so you're talking nine till six. You're talking, what, sort of 8 hours, basically. Yeah. You were there.
And
you,
and 9 hours, nearly.
9 hours. And you got your mother sitting there with you.
Yeah. In limbo.
Mrs. Highland.
Yeah.
So hang on, you had a shower the following day. I mean, surely this is slightly difficult.
Oh, very difficult. But I knew that I had a broken leg, so it might have been the best shower I'd have for a while.
Right.
So I went up to Jota and then got an x-ray there. They had to x-ray themselves and the club doctor came out and just said, broken leg. And
I've never had any experience of A&E, nothing like that, but I was astonished by this and talking to your assistant manager. He came on our podcast subsequently.
Kevin Doherty.
I just thought, I know the health service, there's an awful lot of money put into it and we're very critical of it, but I was astonished by this. Yeah. 9 hours of broken leg and not knowing when you were going to get called.
To be waiting there 9 hours, you're probably sitting there in your kit, were you?
Yeah.
With a broken leg, to me, is ridiculous. It's outrageous.
It's extraordinary. I would say, you play for Drogheda, but was there anyone from the club around as such during this time? Obviously, Tim was in touch with you or whatever.
Yeah, there would have been people in contact with me, and in fairness to Darren McKenna, the club liaison officer, he texted me at one stage and was like, just go and we'll get you sorted in Drogheda. Like, I think he wanted me to go to Drogheda, but obviously I've been up since 9 o'clock that morning, go to play a game. It run on empty, so I went home, went to sleep, and went up the next day. And I can't be thankful enough for the people in Drogheda, because the club doctor, they were first class with me.
How did you travel to Drogheda? How did you travel from the Mater to Drogheda?
Got me father to give me a lift. Yeah. Couldn't drive myself, obviously.
No, I would have thought you'd be driving that, John, to be fair.
No, I was just
would have been a miraculous sort of
a broken car, broken leg, and your old lad just gives you a lift for 40 minutes
it's
up the road.
It's just a mad sort of story, really, you know.
How was your recuperation, mean?
Yeah, it's going well now, but like Sean said there about being injured in England, it's obviously tough because it's 24 hours in a day, and if you've got a broken leg, there's nothing you can do. You can't do any physical activity.
Watch the racing,
yeah, caught up on that, talking to you. But you have to have good people around you, like, so I have my missus and my family around me, and Tim as well was very good, constantly in contact with me. The season ended a couple of weeks later against Finn Harp, so Tim could have easily turned around and said, he's got a broken leg, I don't want him, and not been in contact with me, but he was really good in contact with me every day, and straight away he said, I want to sign you back and back for captain next year. So that sort of put me at ease as well.
And you're advertising their new shirt as well. I saw there the other yesterday, was it?
Yeah, Monday night we had a kit launch, yeah.
Yeah, tell us about that actually, because interesting stuff going on at Drogheda.
Yeah, it is, the new owner in, and it's very good, very ambitious. Launched the new kit. It's obviously the club's 100 years old this year. So the first year the club were in existence, they had a red kit, red and black, so they went back to red and black this year. And they've new promotion with Turkish Airlines, a lot of new sponsors on board, so it's all looking really good.
It's mad, Dan, because I remember when I was a kid looking at that Drogheda crest, I was like, it's so like Middle Eastern looking or something, but there is a link. Mm. It's Trabzonspor, is it?
Yeah, well, this was like a couple of years back, there was a friendly match even, and there seems to be a strong link, historical link that is there. But I just hope the Drogheda is a club. I mean, they've been cash strapped for the last couple of years. I mean, they need to get to the stadium. It's bloody obvious they need to get to the stadium. I mean, like the two stadiums in Louth, like, aren't fit for purpose, really, you know, in terms of what they should be for the standard that they're at. Tim did it unbelievably well last year. I think, you know, with the resources they have relative to maybe some of the other clubs that were challenging, and that's the struggle now. I mean, I'm sure Drogheda have ambitions this year, but you must look at like what Shells are able to bring in, and even Bray to a degree, some players. And
Longford
they do need backing. I mean, money talks ultimately. As much as, you know, I mean, in fairness, UCD were exceptional last year, but they almost have a full-time structure that the players are together every day. So, I mean, do you feel a bit of optimism growing around the club in the last couple of weeks, Jim?
Yeah, definitely. The place is full of positivity, and especially with Tim, you'd had him on, and he's a really ambitious manager. Like, he doesn't want to sit in the first division and just rot away, you know what I mean? He has ambitions, and obviously you'd done the report in the off-season about Shells. He was their number one priority, and there's a reason that he turned him down. He didn't turn him down because he just wants to plod along at Drogheda. He has got ambitions, and obviously speaking to us privately as a team, and I think we've got a better squad this year. So obviously with the investment Shells and Bray have put in the off-season, it's going to be tough, but I think we'll be thereabouts again.
So how are you physically now? Sorry, yourself, in terms of your own...
Yeah, I started back running on Saturday, so it's been 5 months since the injury, since that night, so looking for the next 4 or 5 weeks, hopefully be able to get back involved on the pitch.
It's not bad. Were you given like 6 months when you were... Were you given a sort of a timeline when you started...
Like within 6 months, you should be able to back run. So I've completed that now already. So they're starting to see light at the end of the tunnel. It's just good. That's the longest off season. Haven't missed a game.
Well, that's the only positive. It's a good lead to break your neck in around November.
But I'm going to speculate. So if you won the prize from Drogheda, if you win this prize from Turkish Airlines, fly anywhere in the world, Melbourne Cup maybe.
Hang on, you have to explain this prize, Sean.
So
off-air discussions aren't available to the podcast listeners.
I went missing there. Now I couldn't remember if we'd mentioned it or not.
No.
So there is a prize from this new Drogheda United Association with Turkish Airlines.
Yeah, they're doing it. Brewers bring a drug home. So you buy the new home kit, you get entered into a raffle to win two business class tickets to anywhere in the world by Turkish Airlines.
And the thing is, bring someone home to watch a game.
Yeah, so hang on, I mean, is it optional for this person to actually come to Toronto?
Yeah.
Go to see Sean and Tala, which would be preferable.
So they could go, they could go somewhere else. I mean, like, I'm just saying.
Sean, I've tipped you to win the league. What, you know, this is going to be an interesting season for Rovers, yeah. Dan reckons Dundalk are home and hoes. I think it might be a bit closer this year. And it was a good start.
Yeah, it was a good start. Obviously, it's only one game, isn't it? And I think last year, Dundalk drew, what, 3 or 4 games? And then they went on and won it by a good few points. But
yeah,
for me, I probably wouldn't get carried away. I'd sort of look at it after the first round of fixtures and then see where we're at. And then, yeah, we could have a right go from there if we're in there and thereabouts.
What was the game like on Friday? Because RT, they're only showing fairly limited highlights this season of those games. Didn't see a lot. Basically saw a goalmouth incident. But was it touch and go, or is it a late winner? Obviously,
yeah, it was late winner. For me, overall, I thought we were probably the better side. They had a couple of chances. Akinadi had two. We actually hit the post, and Alan Manis made
Lopez
a good
had a good effort as well.
Yeah, from just inside their own half. Yeah, but I thought overall we probably were the better team and we probably should have scored a couple of goals. But I was saying to Jake earlier, when it goes that late, it's just an unbelievable feeling.
I thought it was just to get a good start. But I was talking to my mate before the season about where these players fit in at Rovers. So where do you and Trevor Clark fit in, for one thing? Where does Brandon Kavanagh, Dylan Watts, Jack Byrne, Sam Bone,
McAniff,
Greg Bulger. Then you've obviously the strikers, and I like Dan Carr, particularly like Dan Carr's new afro. He just looks a different player with that hair. Like,
it's like a new signing, isn't it?
It is like a new signing. But you've obviously got the Austrian guy who came in who may or may not have got the goal. But where do these players fit in, and how do you keep Trevor Clark out of the team, because he's not bad either?
He's alright, isn't he, Trevor? That's not for me, that's for the manager, that's what he gets paid for.
You have your place
at
the moment anyway.
At the minute, so now look, Trevor can play left back, I can play left back, he can play on the wing.
We can both play on the wing.
So, look, that's for the manager to decide. It's not for me to decide, but I'm just happy to be playing. I'll give you a sort of a safe answer there.
How much do you enjoy the he's not, but listen, come on. He's played Fulham first team, probably got media trained at some stage. He knows what he's at.
He doesn't need chains.
The day-to-day environment at Rovers, Roadstone, can I just ask you, as someone who's been away and played in England, you know, at good clubs and maybe different levels of clubs, but how do you enjoy the sort of the Rovers atmosphere, just living at home, but as a full-time footballer at home?
For me, it's probably one of the most enjoyable times I've had in my career. Just being home, obviously we're full-time, we're in the morning, so I've loved it every minute since I've been home, and being around my family, and I have a little boy myself, so being around him every day is...
How old is he?
He's 4, just turned 4.
Right, okay.
You had a kid early.
Yeah, the strike rate was great. Was.
What happened since?
Haven't went down that route yet, but being around him, and I think that's just made me enjoy my football a bit more as well. Like I said, it's probably the most enjoyable time I've actually had in football.
Yeah, because I mean, it's... When you were away in England, what impression did you have of the league at home? I know you obviously probably had friends and, you know, ex-Belvo teammates and other people that would have been involved, but I still talk to lads in England who aren't sure about coming home because there's always that stigma that comes with it. I mean, did you have a bit of that with you, that I want to stay in England, or what way did you manage it?
Yeah, you always have a little bit. I'd be lying if I said to you and said, no, I didn't want to stay.
Yeah.
I did. I would have probably liked to stay over there, but I was speaking to a couple of lads I was at Fulham with, Dan O'Reilly. He was away with me, and I spoke to him quite a bit about he came home, and I was just asking him, how have you found it and stuff like that, but he spoke really highly about it. And then there was just a time and a point where I said, nothing's happening here, so I need to come home.
You had to write off some money to come home as well. I mean, Stephen Bradley spoke about that. You were on a reasonably good deal, so you'd clearly reached a point where you needed to get out of what you were in at that stage.
Yeah, it was nearly at breaking point. I was over there on my own, and I was training with, say, the 21s, who are, they're not even 21, they're probably 18, 19, and I'm 22, 23. I feel a lot old, and then when I'm going home by myself and have nothing to do, and I just thought, I need to get away from this. Like, it's bad for your mental health rather than playing football, so I just decided to come home and hopefully get a bit of game time, which happened last year.
So, I mean, who do you speak to in those afternoons, those days when you get home?
I'm sort of a weird one. When I'm actually feeling bad, I don't talk to anyone. I try and just...
Well, that's not that weird. That's pretty normal, actually, even though it shouldn't be.
Yeah, but although it shouldn't be, I was just sort of blanking people. I'd have phone calls every, say, 10 minutes from my mum, whoever, my girlfriend, and I was at home. I'd rather watch Jeremy Coyle than actually talk to them on the phone.
That is bad, though.
That's how bad it got. Yeah. So,
and you have a baby boy as well.
Yeah.
At this age.
He was probably the only one that I wanted to talk to be honest.
And he couldn't answer back.
No, he was...
But around the club, like, the people notice that you're in this zone, you know?
I don't know. You sort of put up a front when you go in. You're in a change room with, 20 lads. You can't go in and be down. And can you tell 20 lads, I don't feel great mentally here? Sort of, I don't know, it's that environment.
It's more macho than that as well.
Yeah, you probably have to put up a front and say, I feel great and I'm playing great, I look great, but at the end of the day, I wasn't.
And if you're playing with lads, if you're basically relegated to playing with the under-21s, you're kind of out of sight, out of mind to people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I wasn't, like I said earlier on, I wasn't even training with the first team, so you're on a completely different schedule. You're probably, they're off days, you're in, and you're off days, they're in, so you probably see them a couple of times a week, if even that.
Did things lift when you came to Ireland?
Yeah, 100%. As soon as I got in and trained with Rovers and started playing, like I said, it's probably the most enjoyable time I've had in football, being home around everyone. And
does it not kind of reinforce us the need for us to keep young players at home if we can and to educate them here? Because I just think that scenario you paint there is just so...
bleak.
It's bleak, but it's also like you can easily see how it happens, because you go from a high to like playing for the first team of Fulham and then playing with kids, and that's a massive blow. We don't see this in it's like if we just lost our job and basically had no job, and we're, you know, you're thriving as a kid and all of a sudden nobody wants to know you, really.
It's like, yeah, like you said, if you really young, you hit your job like a really high point, and then you feel like you're doing well, and then I don't know, a few months down the line, you get let go from your job. Where do you go from there? You have to start over again, don't you? So,
what it seems to me, like in England, it seems that lads break in, but there's always people coming behind and coming through. So if you have one setback, like, you have to admire someone like Matt Doherty, who's managed to just, he's probably had his low moments, but he stuck it out. But it seems like one bad season can kill you a bit in terms of where you're at.
Yeah, it can finish it off, really, as your career over there. There's always somebody, that's what they used to say to us, there's always somebody younger and better than you. So,
like Jake back in the day.
Yeah.
it's mad though that, you know, at least you've come home now and you're back in a professional environment. And I've always said this, it's great to live at home. If I was offered double the money I'm on to live in England, I'd be very wary of doing it, genuinely.
Yeah.
Because I like living in Dublin, I like living in Ireland, I like being around my family.
Yeah, I found that a big part of it as well, being around my family. And like last year, I was able to go to, I don't know,
Shelbourne Park.
Yeah, Shelbourne Park, and lose a few quid. Yeah,
your farm runs in. Yeah,
that's it. Only around the corner. But say, I was able to go over to my granddad's and have a cup of tea with him.
Shouldn't be underestimated. Like,
it's a little things like that you don't miss that I probably didn't do for 5 or 6 years.
You were living in London. It's not like you were living in some grim northern town or whatever, like Drogheda or something.
He was in Hartlepool for a while.
Let's not talk about that.
Even Brian Clough didn't like Hartlepool. I think he said it was good. But how did you enjoy actually playing in Europe last season as well, just to be back and playing like at a good level in four Rovers?
Yeah, that was travelling over there. You get some buzz off that, you know, travelling over there and training. The night before in the stadium, we got lucky with the stadium we played in. It was obviously the Swedish national team stadium.
Should have gone through.
Yeah, we should have gone through. We obviously beat them in the 90 minutes, and then they came out and scored early doors in extra time, and then backs up against the wall. We needed to score, but it didn't happen. But yeah, it was good.
John, we should move on to the first division, because the first division does kick off on Friday. So
we're going to be in Terryland for the visit of the champions elect.
You still call it Terryland rather than Eamon Deasy Park? Yeah. You're sort of old school.
Eamon Deasy's a legend, but that was how I used to call it. You're
reclaiming the Dyke.
Very, very, very briefly, do you want Rovers to win, like, because you're a Bows fan? Sean's your mate, or are you hoping they lose every week?
Definitely not against Bows.
But in general, you don't mind too much?
I want to see Sean do well, and obviously he's doing well since he came out from England.
Sean play well and they lose the game.
Man of the match in a 3-2 defeat. That'll be
Dan, first division.
So, I mean, there's a lot to talk about around the first division season, but last week at the launch, I did speak to Tommy Barrett because Limerick have come down, have dropped down along with Bray, and bit of chat about, you know, changes in Limerick in the off season. Maybe there might be a bit of a change in terms of investment, or that's a bit unclear. But I spoke to Tommy broadly about dropping down and how they adjusted to what was probably a really difficult relegation year that they had last year.
How challenging was last year for you? Because there was stuff going on, which, aside from the challenge of being a young manager managing a team in the Premier Division of the League of Ireland, there was other things going on in the background as such. I mean, how was that for you?
It was a difficult year. It was a difficult season for everyone. When you get relegated, it's a different year. But look, I don't want to use excuses. Everyone knows what happened. I'm not really into excuses. You know, I think you're going nowhere. I suppose I can only look at myself and what I could have done better. There's a few things, you know, I could have done better probably myself. And as players, you know, we could have done better as a group. So at the end of the day, we have 11 players out on the pitch. We had a chance to stay in the Premier League. Hearts were better than us. I thought we were better than them in the first leg. We lost on a penalty. And the second leg, in fairness, they were better than us, you know. We lost 8 players in the mid-season. I thought we were just coming right, to be fair. I think we'd beaten Waterford and we'd drawn with Bowes. I think we should have beat Bowes on the day. We're playing a good brand of football. We lost those 6, 7, 8 players. Now, that is an excuse. I'm making it, you know, and that was a big hit to us. But we had to lose them because we couldn't afford to keep them financially. So the survival of the club was more important. But we still had a chance to stay in the Premier League, and ultimately we failed.
How difficult is the day or two after that playoff defeat? I mean, because you know players are going to leave. You may not have known your own situation, perhaps. I don't know. Yeah. Like, how do you get through that period as such?
Yeah, look, it's gut wrenching, you know. But you have to, I suppose. Look, at the end of the day, it's like I don't say this lightly, but it's football. It's entertainment, you know. You got to bounce back. You have this year now to try bounce back. But in saying that, are we ready to go back into the Premier League? I think we need to get our house in order. I think we need to, you know, build from within. I said it already in the past, and locally I kind of got a bit sorted for it. We haven't really produced players in Limerick around the league, or even to go and play in England in the last 20, 30, 40 years. You know, we hadn't had a senior international in 40 years maybe. So, you know, it's only the last few years since the underage leagues came in that we have had players playing around the league, like someone in Coughlin now, and you know, there's other lads like excuse me, playing around the league from Limerick, Joel Cushain up in Rovers. But before that, you know, like I can really think of Bobby Ryan, you know, in the last 20, 30 years. So, and I know Barry Ryan's from our region in Ennis as well. He would have played around the league. But we're a good junior soccer city, but we haven't developed players in senior level. So we're bringing lads in then, and that's part of the cost. We have to bring better players in to stay in the league. And the only time we kind of got out of the division is when we had real big budgets, you know, and brought in players. So we have to develop our own. And for me, this year is about, even if more money comes in, it's about developing our own players in the region. And we have them, you know. It's just having a bit of faith in them, you know. They're young at the moment, and going that way. I think that's the way to go, Daniel.
You did bring in quite a few of those players towards the end of last season. You've sort of managed to keep hold of a couple of them that were the subject of a bit of interest. I mean, was that a challenge to keep hold of them? Was there, you know, with Will Fitzgerald, there was certainly talk that clubs were having a look.
Yeah, Will and Carl. Look, obviously Stephen Kenny brought him into the 21s there recently as well, and you know, two good young lads. But they're in college in Limerick, and you know, the education is important to them as well. And that's the way we have to look at it. You know, that they're in college and they want to finish off their degrees. I firmly believe that the players need to stay in the league now. You know, I think that's proven, you know, with lads that didn't even go across the water now or even to the continent, that if you stay in the league for a few years, you're better off. You're a more rounded player and you go straight into the first team elsewhere. So I think the boys know that, you know. I kind of tied them up early. I tied Carroll up early this year, and you know, they're playing for the jersey, they're not obviously on big money. And it is tough for them to make that decision, but I think to sit down with the families, we try to create the best environment as we can. They'll know what they'll play, and you know, I think we play a good brand of football too, to be fair. So I think they're learning all the time, and I think if they rip it up this year, it'll be better for them than sitting on a bench with someone else.
I think if you were to step back from outside and maybe look at the last 10 years, I'll say Limerick as a club, and it's been a sort of a crazy time, because you've had lows than almost the highs of the Markets Field being crammed with like sort of 5,000 people for a playoff first leg and that late run to avoid relegation. And there seemed to be a fear maybe last year that any support or momentum built up is maybe just slipping away a small bit. So do you hope, like, what's the next 5 years? Is it about sort of, because in one way it shows that there's great potential there and that this support exists, but then on the flip side they haven't been kept around consistently for whatever reason.
Yeah, it's for me, it's for building that base. You know, I mightn't be the man that's, you know, bringing us to Europe or even back into the Premier League or even consistent in the Premier League, but as a Limerick man, I think we have to get it right. You can't keep doing the same thing, you know, over and over again and getting the same results. You know, I think that's the definition of madness, really, isn't it? You know, you're up and down. When we have money, we're up and down, you know. So we need to develop our own. We need to develop a proper infrastructure. We need to develop community programs, which we've done quite well, but we have to get more in the school. We have to create that identity. I think people speak about identity and stuff a lot, but do we actually put enough work into it, you know? And we have to get the off-field structure right. We have to get the environment around the Marcus Field right. We have to get the fans more positive, and that positive energy is massive as well, you know. You can't underestimate that kind of stuff, and I think that goodwill has to be there first and foremost. And that hasn't been there. You know, it's been there, okay, when Pat came in, it created a boost and created a shift, but you can't just aim for glory straight away on the pitch. I think the foundations have to be put in place, and we're going to try to do that, you know, and hopefully we can get that done. But for the next 5 years, that's it for me. It's developing players. And to be fair, we've had success in developing players in regard to, you know, we sold Paddy Connor to England, we sold Barry Cotter to England, you know, we've done that in the underage system. And I'd say we're developing them as players as such, but I suppose they're coming through our system. Again, for me, that's a product of playing the best against the best. It's not down to super brilliant coaching facilities, anything like that. It's the best against the best. I think we're making too much about coaches and managers these days, personally. I think it's at the end of the day, it's about the players, you know, and how good they are, and if they want to make it, they make it themselves, you know. But we have to create that proper environment for them, and I think that's what we have to get right.
Just on that, then, I recall looking at this last season in terms of the First Division being the backwater that it is, but Limerick are one of those powerhouse names, like Limerick, Drogheda, Galway, Shelburne, Longford, Bray. They're fairly big names to be in what is really competitive First Division. I guess the problem is that nobody cares really about it beyond the clubs.
Well, yeah, I mean, they care towards the end of the season, and I think like the four teams being in the playoff gives it a bit more of a huge. It has the potential to be exciting, and I think last season the playoffs, and Jake was involved in them last year.
Briefly,
there was a bit of a buzz around them. I don't know what we do about the First Division generally.
It needs more publicity. It needs more coverage of its games. I know you disagree with me on this, but
it's not that I disagree with you. I think that you need to showcase the best things of it, and I think. But I mean, you can say that about Premier Division grounds too. But if you want to do it, you want to do it at a certain standard. I don't think that people are, you know, to showcase the best of it. You talk about camera angles, everything that works, rather than just showing, you know, goals off a sort of a ground level camera in Wexford or something. I don't think that showcases it well at all, you know. So I don't know how you address it. I mean, I know Limerick a couple of years back, and we mentioned Limerick, you know, they were going very well. They pretty much put all their games on Facebook, from what I recall. They actually streamed it, and I think First Division clubs should explore that type of thing, because there's no TV rights deal. There's nothing that holds them back, or there shouldn't be anything that holds them back in that regard. So maybe they need to be more
like some of the biggest grounds in the country, Talca Park, Terryland Park.
No, it's true.
Are in the First Division, like,
and sometimes
Athlone is in good nick. Limerick's not bad at all.
You'll have Division 4 sort of, you know, lower level.
Longford's a lovely.
No,
ground.
You'll have lower level sort of hurling games and stuff, you know, and non-hurling kind of, and their games might get more coverage, and you might still have, you could have 1,500 at a Shell's big game at a certain stage of the season, or draw.
Galway United would be hoping for a big crowd. Like, we're talking 3,000 on Friday now.
I think there's an argument for.
I just think we can't promote the game when we don't even know what the players are like, because we don't see them. So you have to go to a game, which I don't think is satisfactory. But I don't know, Jake, you must feel that frustration as well, because you know these players are good.
Yeah, definitely. But I think this year, maybe with the investment of Shells and Bray, that it is getting a bit more coverage. And I think the onus has to be on clubs as well. I don't know what the situation is, the FAO, if they're allowed, but after the game, to put the highlights up straight away.
They are in the first division.
Yeah. I don't think there's any issues.
Clubs have their YouTube channel and they put it out there, and the more work to do on social media to get more people at the games. Like, we're hoping to get 1,000 people at the game on Friday. Mm. Like you said, at Terryland Park, it's going to be 2,000 or 3,000. The attendances in the Premier Division were up last week last season. So hopefully this year you can get off to the start.
I just remembered, you beat Rovers in the Cup last season as well. What about that, Sean?
You
got some evidence of the first division. Were you playing that night?
Yeah, I played. Yeah. They were really good that night, and it was sort of my first experience to the first division. And it was sort of an eye-opener to, I wouldn't say like we held them, we went down there thinking we should win. But
you're obviously expecting to win.
Yeah, you're expecting to win, but when you go down, and to be fair to them, they played some really, really good stuff, and they probably had more chances than us, and they probably could have beat us by two or more.
Longford beat Sligo. Watford were very hard to beat you then. Yeah. UCD put up a very UCD good show in Oriel.
Well, more to the point, Finn Harps went up to their playoffs as well, and that probably pays a compliment. The playoff, if the playoff winner comes from the second and the first, or you know, the team in the first, that's probably a sign of health. And certainly we've seen in recent years, I mean, Finn Harps have done that a couple of times against Limerick, you know, from the first division.
From your experience, Dan, is it a straightforward Shelburne win the league?
I'm not 100% convinced. I mean, they've signed some very good players. I mean, you know, Kieran Kilduff, Luke Byrne, obviously was at Rovers last year. You consider the guys who were at Bowes. I mean, Conan Byrne, of course, yeah. I mean, yeah, if you look at their squad, you think, now the Bray squad still has been, Paul Keegan was in with us last week, you know, Dylan McLeod, Barnett, who was at Waterford last year. You know, sometimes, like, if you have a really good 11, you know, a really strong group, I mean, Shells have a squad to manage, but a team could get on a run and then you never know.
Drogheda have Thomas Byrne.
Thomas Byrne, yeah.
Yeah,
a character to bring back into the group, Jake.
Yeah, there's no hiding that he's a madman. Absolutely madman. But, I think his ability on the pitch speaks for itself. Like, he's not yourself. He's an unbelievable talent. And we're just hoping that this year, like, myself being captain and Tim and Kev, the managers, can kind of keep a hold on him.
How do you
as a captain, how do you talk to Thomas?
That's a tough one. I'll have to find that out when I get back playing. But he's off the pitch, he's a quiet young fella. He's really nice, he's quiet, but when he gets on the pitch, he's just an absolute madman. But we're just hoping that he can do his talking on the pitch. And it is tough. I heard Tim's interview last week. He said he's probably one of the most felt players in the league because he is so good and he's such low centre gravity that he just glides by people.
And he's also probably an easy target for a bit of the 100%. Old sledge or whatever. You know?
I think you'd be if you were in an opposition dressing room, you'd probably know that he has that fuse.
Tim needs the referees to kind of manage that then and just say,
definitely. But what I'd say to him as well, it should be a compliment to his game that he's the number one target. They're all going out to kick him. So we just want to try to get the best out of him this year. And he could be air key to winning the league.
Who else would look at? Like, Adam Wicks is a good sign as well.
Yeah, Wicks is brilliant there. He was with us, obviously, when we got promoted under Pete. So I think we've got a stronger squad this year than last year. We have a young lad in from Pats, Luke McNally. And obviously you see him with Kieran Kelly last year coming from Pats.
He's gone back to Pats now.
Gone back to Pats full time. So we're hoping to get the same story out.
Yeah, I mean, Longford are going to be interested. I mean, I think Longford have signed Sean Brennan on loan, who's an ex Belvo lad from Southampton. There was a lot of talk about Sean Brennan a couple of years back, and it's slightly surprising, but I mean, you never know, it just mightn't have settled or whatever it might be. You know, so Longford are going to be in pre-season against Cork and Dundalk. They had good results. As much as pre-season is pre-season, you can read too much into it sometimes.
As much as it's social media and...
Athlone might even be better.
Yeah,
you know?
In fairness,
Athlone are a problem for the first division last year in terms of publicity and promoting it.
They put in their
There was lads playing for Athlone last year, with all due respect, who weren't like second-tier players in terms of... You know, there'd be better players at junior level in Ireland and so on. You know, and that doesn't help the image of the first division.
Whether it's in your cup or not, they beat Dundalk, and Dundalk wouldn't have had a bad team out.
You need to believe that it's the second highest level of football in Ireland.
And treat it accordingly. But I would implore any first division clubs listening in to promote the players, promote the goals in social media. Social media is increasingly where it's at. We do have a chance to promote it because I think it's a good standard, and I think there are a lot of young players there who need promotion. Shells will probably win the league, but there are a lot of players, or a lot of teams that will think we can at least finish in the top four.
Definitely, you know? I think you look at the year Limerick went up. We went up for the playoffs that year, which Rada, and Limerick did run away with it. But the year after that, Waterford went up, I think, by 4 points. UCD only won it last year by 3 points. I know they kind of tailed off towards the end of the season, but we're hoping that if we can get a good start and worry about ourselves, we don't need to worry about Shells. If we can get a good start and get a good run of games, we might have a chance of winning it.
I mean, I think you look at, I mean, you've got Danny Furling at Wexford, you've got, say, Ian Turner at Cove. I think, like, you know, every club seems to have, I mean, Cavan Teely have actually quite a young squad, actually, but they still have Kieran Marty Waters, like, yeah. You know, so
it's going to be a lot more competitive this
year. I think it has the potential. I don't think you can have a club at the bottom like you did last year. Athlone have probably been very damaging to the first division in the last couple of years. That's not bullshit when it comes to that.
You need to get to more games yourself.
Doesn't happen this year. Well, I went to that long game last year, which wouldn't have been a great.
I don't think you went for the game though.
Well, no, I went to see what the club was up.
Did a great piece on us. But we have week one. The fixtures in that, in just while we're on the first division, Athlone versus Wexford, Cavan Teely against Bray, which is kind of a like a South Dublin sort of North Wicklow
derby or something like that.
The Derby. Drogheda United versus Cove Ramblers, who we didn't really mention. Stephen Henderson's been very busy on social media promoting the First Division. Galway United v Shelburne. Just to mention the Reclaim the Dyke, which is a lovely idea from Bernie O'Connell to reclaim the Dyke Road, obviously, is what that's implying. But it means that back in the day, everyone used to walk down the Dyke Road before, I suppose, there were many people driving around Galway, and walk down and see Galway Rovers or Galway United playing Terry Park, and that
you could pick up a stag party, you get confused stag party if you actually just march.
You could pick up anything in Galway. He was on about the Wild West in the hospital. Wait till you go out and go on a Friday night. And then Limerick against Longford Town, which is obviously a very interesting game. We spoke to Tommy Barrett. But Dan, getting back to the Premier Division, this is an intriguing, we have a double round, but the game's on Friday. I think it really brings it along lovely from week one. With Cork City Waterford.
Cork Waterford,
I just get your input on briefly on that. Waterford, we didn't really know where they'd be this season. What did you make them Friday night?
I didn't really know what to make of them either from last year. They were good. I think with obviously Pats have strengthened, I think they'll, in my opinion, they might probably struggle to get into the top four again this year.
Waterford? Yeah. It's a very competitive league. I kind of fancy Cork to win this because they need to. But, I mean, Alan Reynolds against John Caulfield, there's a lot of bad blood there, Dan.
Yeah, no, no. It should be a spicy affair. You got Sligo Robertson.
Are we doing predictions anymore? No,
we can fly through them, John. But I mean, we started off with a big spiel about making this a shorter show, and then you wanted to analyse every game in depth, and we're going to be minutes.
Not
again.
At all.
Right, I think
so much tension between us. It's only week two.
I know. Home win, Cork.
It's like a married couple.
Yeah.
Well, how's that going? Home win, Cork. I go home win.
Home win, yeah.
Sligo, St. Patrick's.
Yeah, Liam Bucco.
Looking for a big, big crowd in Sligo.
Mikey Drennan, Reese McCabe. I think I'm going to be at that game myself, so that should be a good occasion.
Away win.
Maybe a draw.
UCD against Bowes.
Hope to get a big crowd for that one. Probably a big load of away fans, really.
UCD needs to do a lot more at getting people to their games. Yeah. Might
but I went to UCD for 5 years. It's a struggle. Like that is should
yeah,
be
it's a
main
struggle,
place.
But
we don't have a culture in Ireland of supporting university sport. Like,
just go along to watch a League of Ireland game.
I know.
Do you know? It's and a very good surface.
Yeah, it doesn't have the county
they don't
or the
do
city or the area pull.
In any event, draw.
Maybe a draw on that one as well.
Hearts and Dundalk.
Dundalk have a good record up there. I mean, they sort of have to win this game.
Last time Dundalk played, it was like a silage grass kind of. Remember the pitch in the live game? It was about 6 inches tall. Remember that about two, three seasons ago?
Vaguely.
Oh, it looked absolutely horrendous on TV. It was played on a Saturday
night. Well, they're going to get that new stadium done eventually. There was another story last week about the Finn Harp Stadium. It could happen. It could happen before we're all dead. It could actually happen, the Finn Harp Stadium.
I don't think this is a certainty for Dundalk, but I'll tentative one goal away win.
Yeah, the injuries are a problem. You have to remember Jamie McGrath's coming back. He's been forgotten a small bit in terms of Benson McElhenney. They've got Murray and they've got McGrath to come back in, and who knows, they'll probably sign someone else this week. And the Shamrock Rovers Derry.
The game of the weekend.
Is it? Yeah, probably. It has the potential. I think Sligo Pats is in there and Cork Waterford. I think actually there's three contenders
it's
for that.
It's my lock of the week.
Rovers to
Shamrock
beat.
Shamrock Rovers to beat Derry. Yeah. I think Derry will probably be a bit flattered by the win against UCD. I'm not convinced about them at the back. I really like the look of Rovers this season. Home win.
There you go. No pressure, Sean.
I'm not getting involved in that.
And then on Monday, we have the Derby. We have Bowes Rovers on Monday.
Sold out already, I think.
It is. It's sold out a while back. I mean, we are, time is tight, but the Derby experience, I probably wasn't happy in terms of results, but as an event, how much did you enjoy it as a newcomer to the league last year?
Like you said, results-wise, trying to forget that, but as an atmosphere, it's unbelievable. The play and the fans really make it. It's probably one of the best atmospheres I've played in. It's really, really good.
Mm, it's just a box to tick now to have that big win in it, right?
Yeah, just get that off my back and then I'll be happy if we get a 3 points against them.
Jake won't be happy though, obviously, if you get 3 points. To be clear,
he won't. Is this be a game now you'd like to tag along to?
Yeah, 100%. But
sold out.
Sold out. I'm back training, so won't be able to make it this one.
And also Derry City against Watford. How they put games like this on a Monday night? Derry City v Watford, Dundalk v UCD, Pats v Finn Harps,
and Sligo Rovers Cork.
Cork.
So we will review both rounds of them next week, and maybe the first division as well, John.
We will. Before we go, where are you Friday night, Dan?
Sligo, as I just said there a few minutes ago, John.
I'm going to be in Terryland, but
you told us that already as well. But thanks for
all right, Dan. Yeah. All right, chill out, man. Yeah. Thanks very much for coming in, lads. Great chat.
Thank you.
Yeah, great time, and enjoy the games Friday night.
But there are limits to your life.